Good morning. It's so good to see you guys today. My name is T.W. Davis. I'm the lead pastor here. And we are in our Job series called What's Your Response? What's Your Response? To understand why the Andrea Gale never had a chance, you need to hear what happened along the shoreline of the eastern seaboard in fall of 1991. In Rhode Island, there was a fisherman who was swept off the rocks while he was fishing and killed. In New York, another man was fishing off a bridge. He lost his life, and they don't know if he was swept off by a high wave or the wind pushed him straight off the bridge. But the New England coastline was hammered so hard that even lighthouses, the buildings that are made to withstand the worst weather, were highly damaged. Utility poles were gone, trees, piers, seawalls, boardwalks disappeared. Flooding was extensive, houses were damaged, roads were closed, airports were closed, and at sea, it was way worse. The Andrea Gale had a crew of six. And it was a small fishing vessel, and it was caught square in the crosshairs of three storms that were colliding. In the movie about this ship, coined the phrase, the perfect storm. And it painted a graphic picture of this crew that was caught in the middle of overwhelming difficulty. Pressed on every side. The fishing vessel went down sometime after midnight on October 28th. And ironically, its search and rescue satellite-aided tracking system washed ashore a week later on an island that no one's on. And when they found it, it had been switched off. Now, it could have been an accident. Could have happened while it was in the water, whatever else. They're made for it not to happen, but anything can happen, right? But it's also possible that the captain simply turned it off as a symbolic gesture of giving in to the worst storm he had ever seen. And if that's what happened, Job would understand. Job's story is so painful that his name is literally linked to suffering itself. To have a Job-like season of life is to suggest that the worst suffering is underway. His perfect storm involved grief beyond description, involved physical pain that defied understanding. It involved spiritual pain that might have been the worst of all. Job came to understand, even as hard rain began pelting him, that the God who could have prevented his suffering had chosen to allow it. The God who should have noticed his faithfulness, and indeed did, had decided to reward his faith with torture. And Job's friends only added to that misery. His wife didn't help at all. And as the skies got darker and things got worse and a thunderstorm blew in around him, Job is connecting the dots between the stormy weather and the difficult situation that he's in. It was a perfect storm of emotional, physical, and spiritual pain. And it descended on an old man, even as the storm overhead was thundering. This is how Job describes his storm. Terrors are turned upon me. My honor is pursued as by the wind, and my prosperity has passed away like a cloud. And now my soul is poured out within me. Days of affliction have taken hold of me. The night racks my bones. The pain that gnaws me takes no rest. With great force, my garment is disfigured. It binds me about like the collar of my tunic. God has cast me into the mire. I've become like dust and ashes. And I cry out for you to help, and you do not answer me. I stand, you only look at me. You've turned cruel to me. In the might of your hand, you persecute me. You lift me up on the wind. You make me ride it. You toss me about in the roar of the storm. You toss me about in the roar of the storm. If you've ever known disease, you know the storm. If you've ever known heart-piercing grief, you know the sensation. If you've ever been betrayed, forsaken, cheated, or hurted. Been around my kid too long. You've known the horror at the heart of all of this. For the God of heaven, the very one the Bible tells us controls all things, at the same time, the God who is said will always love you all the time, no matter what, this same God allowed it to happen. You toss me about in the roar of the storm. As it comes to a conclusion, Job's poetic story indicates a gathering of the clouds, a blowing of winds, a storm so unimaginable, a storm of unimaginable magnitude. And eventually, God speaks to Job out through this storm. His voice is surrounded by flashes of light and thunder, crashes of thunder. And as the storm rolled in, Job never moved. With the rain coming down, he sat in his clumpy, wet mass of dust and ashes, and his sores are oozing, and his heart is broken, and his friends are sitting there with him too, and they got to be anxious, right? Because unlike Job, they want to live. And unlike Job, they don't have the same multiple problems crashing down on them all at the same time. And the symbolic nature of the skies around Job that keep turning darker and darker, and the wind that keeps coming closer, and the thunder that feels like it's right over top is coming closer and closer to Job and this group of men. The more stormy the weather, the more Job related. He was living out the worst days of his life, dealing with that physical, that perfect storm of physical, emotional, and spiritual. And right there, in the apex of this storm, is where life's lessons can be learned, and they became apparent for Job. And I want to look at three of those today. The first is the reality that a perfect storm may overwhelm you. A perfect storm may overwhelm you. Job's perfect storm overwhelmed him. In an amazingly brief period of time, he had been attacked by his enemies, his financial portfolio was gone, and worst of all, his children had been killed. In the aftermath, his health deteriorated to the point that he wanted to die. Yet he couldn't die. And through the worst of it, his friends showed up. His friend showed up and told him that the whole thing had to be his fault. "Confess your sin, Job," they said. "Then maybe God will shut down this attack on you. God is fair and just and right. And no matter how much you protest and tell us that you've done nothing wrong and that you are innocent, Job, God can't be wrong. Come on, man, what did you do to deserve this? Admit it and die." Aren't those great friends? It was a perfect storm that sank Job to the depths of discouragement and depression. And as surely as the Andrea Gale sank to the bottom of the Atlantic, you've seen it before, right? When funerals start arriving for a family, they seem to come in bunches. A family that didn't even know where the community funeral home was, now they know all the back hallways, the secret places you can go cry, the price of coffins, the way to organize a memorial service, and after a rash of funerals, it starts to numb them, and they look around at each other, and they wonder, who's next? What about health issues? Someone who's never had really any health issues, they've been in the best of health, and then troubling symptoms hit them like a truck. And the problems pile up beside them, bringing tests and surgeries and treatments and expensive medical bills and thoughts of giving up. And financial pressures can do the same thing to a family or to a person. A job is lost. Bills are missed. Debts pile up, and then a car or a refrigerator decides not to work anymore, and you don't have the money for repairs. When the storm of financial worry is about to peak, changes are made. Attorneys are consulted, letters are written, phone calls are avoided, and it's just like dancing around lightning bolts in a storm, not knowing where the next one's going to hit. It's the kind of situation that only needs one more element to happen before the entire family is crushed under the wave of the perfect storm. And in the midst of one kind of trouble, sometimes another develops. And it becomes worse, and it becomes overwhelming. And I have to tell you, Christians are not immune to this. Christians are not immune to this. You can't sing your favorite hymn and your problems go away. I tried. And the Bible will 100% bring you comfort for the people who turn there, but there will still be tough decisions that need to be made. There will still be pain that you have to tolerate. There will still be pressures from different angles. Think about David. He knew what hurt looked like in every area of his life. I mean, he'd been promised the throne, and at one point, he lived as a fugitive for years before he got the throne. Joseph had a string of crushing disappointments. He was sold by his brothers. He was betrayed by his employer's wife. He was stuck in a prison he didn't deserve, and he had to be overwhelmed with discouragement. And he rallied after each disappointment. But don't think that he didn't struggle during that time. If you read that and you don't hear a man who is struggling, you are missing that story. Paul was so low in one of his letter writing sessions, he told Timothy that he'd been abandoned, that people had deserted him, and the only person he had left is Luke. And he'd been beaten, chased, arrested, scourged, caned, imprisoned, denied justice, and eventually he got shipwrecked. And through Paul's tremendous attitude and his faith, he knew real pain. The pain that can overwhelm a person, even if it's just for a season. If a perfect storm of problems overwhelms these great individuals in the Bible, including Job, we should not be surprised when circumstances overwhelm us. It's almost like Job held on to his faith, held on to his sanity by his fingertips, barely able to avoid the pit of complete destruction. The next thing I want you to know is a perfect storm might drive you away from God. Job was a great, great man of faith. He hadn't just gone through all the right motions. He lived it out. He had a heart to go along with those actions. He'd been so faithful, he was the subject of a conversation in heaven. And the Lord said to Satan, "Have you considered my servant Job? There is none like him on the earth, a blameless and upright man who fears God and turns away from evil." But after the storm battered Job long enough, he had some serious questions about God. The combination of pain and heartache and unending agony shattered the impression of God that he'd always known. The logic was impossible to miss. No matter how long Job tried to keep a good impression of God, his reality was this: if I recognize that God is in control of everything, why has God allowed this suffering? If God noticed the faithfulness of one of his humans, why would God reward that faithfulness with so much pain? I need you to hear, pain is a powerful teaching tool. It is a powerful teaching tool, an incredible one. And it takes place when people connect with pain. Even when that pain is in the life of someone else, potentially. When the pain is severe enough. When it's shocking enough and the change is enormous enough, change can take place. That's in individuals. That's in groups of people. Foundational beliefs can be shaken. Prejudices can crumble. The thought of God can turn to things when they never were there before. Job's very public grieving led to a change in him. He demanded a hearing. And he demanded that God be the defendant. Job reviewed his life, his efforts to avoid sin, his attempts to worship God, and the very God who seemed bent on his destruction. Job's suffering took him to the edge of rejecting the God he'd always served and he'd always loved. If you ever run into the perfect storm of pain and suffering, it may take you some time for you to place where you're really at. Thankfully, for those who endure the suffering, there's hope, even in the midst of it. That's the last life lesson that Job gives us here. God is most clearly revealed to us in the worst moments of our suffering. Sometimes life's most difficult circumstances can lead to life's most enlightening moments. In the classroom of suffering, important lessons are learned. It was that way for Job. Job had longed all his life to know God. He had brought offerings. He had kept the rules. He kept a righteous heart. But it was only in his suffering, in the very worst of the suffering, that he met God in the deepest way. In the middle of that storm that nearly devastated him, Job met God. Of course, the meeting didn't go exactly how Job wanted. But Job met God. God spoke to Job directly. That doesn't happen very often. God spoke to Job directly and challenged Job to answer his questions and to stop asking so many of his own. And the Lord said to Job, "Shall a fault finder contend with the Almighty? He who argues with God, let him answer it." And Job answered the Lord and said, "Behold, I am of small account. What shall I answer to you? I lay my hand on my mouth. I've spoken once. I will not answer twice, but I will proceed no further." The Lord answered Job out of a whirlwind and said, "Dress for action like a man. I will question you, and you make it known to me. Will you even put me in the wrong? Will you condemn me so that you may be in the right? Have you an arm like God, and can you thunder with a voice like his? Adorn yourself with majesty and dignity. Clothe yourself with glory and splendor." Job ain't stand a chance. He couldn't stand under those withering questions of the Almighty God. And once proper order had been restored, Job was finally ready to address God correctly. Then Job answered the Lord and said, "I know that you can do all things and that no purpose of yours can be thwarted. Who is this that hides counsel without knowledge? Therefore, I have uttered what I did not understand, things too wonderful for me, which I did not know. Hear, and I will speak, I will question you, and you make it known to me. I had heard of you by the hearing of the ear, but now my eye sees you. Therefore, I despise myself and repent in dust and ashes. How ironic is this? It took the worst days of Job's life to bring him to a place where, in his words, he was able to see God. No longer had he just heard of God. No longer had he just done the things. He knew God. And even in continuing crushing loss, Job's now satisfied. How many stories can we tell? How many stories can we tell of people who only found God when they hit rock bottom in real life? There's a man that I baptized who told me that landing in prison was the best thing that ever happened to him. His choices led to him being behind bars. But that's where he learned about the gospel. That's where he learned about Jesus. And if he hadn't have gotten caught, he would have continued doing it and done way worse. When life-transforming truth becomes your own, prison turns from a place of confinement to a place of enlightenment. What about those who hear the terrible prognosis at a doctor's office? It's only then they decide to get serious about Jesus, serious about God. No wonder some people have said, cancer is the best thing that ever happened to me. If it hadn't been for cancer, I'd never met the Lord. When people face life-threatening moments, planned or unplanned, they often seem to come face-to-face with the ultimate truth. Life is short, eternity's forever, and God's in charge. They have Job-like revelations in the peak of the storm that cause so much pain. And it's not always medical or physical emergencies. Financial hurricanes can sweep people away. There are times when you lose your job and you don't know why. And then something amazing happens afterwards. There's a gentleman who wanted to go on the mission trip with us last week. And he told me, I can't go because I don't have the vacation time. My work won't let me leave. And then a month later, he got laid off. And he went on the mission trip with us and started his new job the Monday we got back. In the middle of the storm, you might find a lifelong prayer answered. Jesus challenged us this way, but seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things will be added to you. Job found the God he'd been looking for, not by avoiding the storm, but by holding on to the thread of faith he had and went directly into the hardest of hard times. God was revealed best by the very storm that seemed to put clouds around who he was and where he was. So it's a story of two people. One of them is Ted Turner. He is 85 years old. He was a staple in the news for years. Presently, I looked it up this week, his net worth is $2.5 billion. He's made an impact on cable television, news reporting, professional wrestling, and my baseball team, the Atlanta Braves. He's given over $1 billion to the United Nations. He's contributed countless to humanitarian organizations. How's that for a blessed man, right? And through it all, He's never been boring. He's outspoken at every turn. And he said some crucial, harsh things against Christianity. He said Christianity is a religion for losers in 1990. In another occasion, he joked with the press that the Pope needs to go and step on a landmine. He wants to ask some CNN employees who are wearing ashes on their forehead for Ash Wednesday, what are you, a bunch of Jesus freaks? Interestingly enough, he grew up in a Christian home. And at 17, his plan was to be a missionary. He said in an interview, I was very religious when I was young. I was a born-again Christian. In fact, I was born again 7 times, including once by Billy Graham. I know Christianity inside and out, he said. But he lost his faith when he watched his sister die from a rare form of lupus when she was 20. And he said for 5 years before she died, he prayed every day for 30 minutes straight for God to save her, and he didn't. And he said, a kind and loving God wouldn't let my sister suffer so much, so I don't want to have anything to do with him. The concept of suffering separated Ted Turner from his faith in God. And the other person to consider up there, Amy Carmichael. You may know that name. She also knew the disappointment of unanswered prayer. As a kid, she was the only brown-eyed person in her entire village in the United Kingdom. She wanted blue eyes like everybody else, but she was different. She prayed every night for God to change her eye color, and he didn't. Then she decided to be a missionary, and she moved to India, where because of her brown eyes, she was then considered part of the group and not weird looking. And she was able to be a missionary there. She remained there for the rest of her life. And while serving there, giving a lifetime of service, she developed a painful nerve condition. And that caused her a few years later to have a great fall. And she was bedridden for the last 20 years of her life in India as a missionary. But she saw that suffering as a gift from God. She said, a wise master never wastes his servant's time. She wrote most of her 46 books from that bed. Books that have inspired generations of believers and a host of missionaries. Her life and her books were the inspiration for Jim and Elizabeth Elliot. Her life and her books and her legacy inspired Mother Teresa in India as well. People who changed the world for Christ through her suffering. She saw her suffering turn to pure joy. You're not going to like me for saying this, and I'm sorry, but storms are coming. Storms are coming. They come for all of us, and you have a choice. You can either accept that as part of life, as Amy Carmichael did, or you can reject God because of that same suffering, like Ted Turner did. That's the question. You decide. So, what's your response? What storm do you want to turn over to God? What storm are you mad about and you need to turn it over to God? That's question number one. And that may be some of you. Question number two, in what storm were there dark clouds around you and you saw God in it? What storm do you need to tell God thank you for? In the back of your, in the seat back, I feel like a stewardess every time. in the seat back pocket in front of you, there's a card. It looks like that. And I want you to write down a storm. I want you to write down a storm. Either you're going through it right now and you can't see God in it, or a storm that's already happened and you couldn't see God in it, or a storm that you know God was with you in and you need to say thank you for. Write that down. Write that down. And you need to pray, God, help me see you. Or God, thank you for your faithfulness. Job's message. Job, looked squarely and honestly into the center of the clouds and into the raging storm. And you will find the God that has kept his promise to never leave you, to never forsake you, to never stop using you for his glory. So as Tyler sings, take that card, fill it out, pray about it. And when the time comes, come up to the front, drop it in the basket, and then get your communion. That's your offering to God and your acceptance on his Son, Jesus Christ.